Are we recording? Okay, we're recording. Okay, so I am here with Caroline Calloway, and I feel like she needs no introduction. However, I'm going to let her introduce herself in her own words, if she wants, because I like to let people say what they are without me saying what they are.
What if I was just like, Google me? It's all true.
Well, then, I mean, the truth is people would find very, very disparate things, because I find the most fascinating thing about you, and one of the reasons I wanted to have you on this show, is that people have the most extreme opinions about you one way or the other. And as you said, if you Google you, you're liable to find someone who loves you and thinks you're the greatest thing under the sun, and someone who hates you and thinks you're the worst thing under the sun. So I just want to talk to you about like what that is like to experience and to keep experiencing, because you live in a very public forum. But I'm already getting too ahead of yourself. Please tell us who you are.
My name is Caroline Calloway. I'm confused about this microphone and if I can sit here. Yeah, I need to be closer.
There you go.
Okay, cool. I'm glad I asked.
Yeah.
I'm Caroline Calloway. I'm no longer confused about the mic situation.
Great.
And I'm a writer and art historian. A very bad one, and a very good artist. And the media that I make art in are paintings and writing and digital storytelling, Instagram stories and Instagram captions. I think of that as art that I make.
That's, yeah, I mean, we were talking just before we started Caitlin Flanagan's article about you, and I love her. I think she's the best no matter what she writes. And I loved her article about you. And she kind of talked a little bit about how Instagram in the right hands is kind of like a living piece of creative nonfiction, which I know you have a background in. And we talked a little bit about that piece, but that sort of, I hadn't really thought of it like that. And I'm newer to discovering you because the genesis of me being interested in you was so many people around me were talking about you. And then I started to look and read about you and look at your page. And it is, I find it to be actually pretty different than what most people might call like an influencer.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what you get labeled as, an influencer, and you kind of like get lumped into with a bunch of other people. And when I think of influencer, I think of like somebody on a beach somewhere, like trying to sell me like a face cream or something. And you don't do that. And yours, you use Instagram in a very sort of different way, but I think a way that people sort of look to as like a new potential creative outlet. Is that right?
Yeah, I've never done an ad on my Instagram grid. Like, I've never sold a permanent post.
Oh, that's cool.
And I've only done one ad ever in my stories. It was for this animated series by the producers of BoJack Horseman that I really love. I felt like it was accepting an ad for promoting other people's art.
Yeah.
Which I felt morally very okay with. But if I can avoid it in the future and still keep the lights on and mm-hmm. pay rent, I will never do an ad again, because it's so hard to get people to take my Instagram seriously as art, honestly.
Sure.
Like, people just don't want to see it that way. Yeah. And I feel like not only is it my best path forward for getting people to take it seriously,
right,
is not running ads, but also I'm really fascinated to see how the value of having a totally ad-free account on Instagram will appreciate in value, because like even actresses and models do ads all the time, and I really have a good feeling about how increasingly special the fact that I don't run ads will be in the coming years. And I'm excited to explore that.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely rare. It definitely stands out. Because the one thing I think you want to pair, we have all these Perriers here, and we have Pellegrinos, we have whatever kind of sparkling beverage you want.
Yeah, I would describe it as an abundance of Perrier.
It is an abundance of Perrier. Yeah,
at Perrier, you should definitely sponsor this podcast.
Please, listen to Caroline. You haven't been listening to me for all of this time that I've been trying to get sponsored by you. Listen to Caroline. She says, sponsor me. Perrier, sponsor me. Thank you. But yeah, I mean, the ads thing, I think for me, when I'm, because I'm on Instagram, I'm on Instagram a lot. I see a lot of people on there, and anytime I see someone who does a lot of ads, I just think, aren't I being like sold enough shit? Like, this is a place where I just like, if I'm on here, I just want to see what people are up to and what they're doing and what they're saying. I don't like give a shit, and I don't want to follow someone anymore if there's like, there's like a McDonald's ad or something, and like it's someone super cool like eating a fucking Big Mac.
You know, I actually really disagree with you.
Yes.
I think that's so, as a creative person, that's a crazy opinion to have, to be so entitled to artists' creativity that you should receive that content for free and they shouldn't be able to monetize it. Just because I'm really excited to explore sort of the frontiers of what a demonetized account looks like. I think, you know, you would never work for free as a director.
No, I wouldn't.
Exactly.
Although I have, I wouldn't do it again.
I know.
I learned the hard way. No, but I'm not saying so, ads like, on the site don't bother me. But when I'm following someone who like...
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That creator
yeah.
is giving you so much value for free all the time. It's totally... I just disagree. And I think it's totally... I think you should be able to... Your annoyance is valid, but also valid is their... need to make money and pay bills and to be compensated for all the creative content they provide you for free.
For sure. And that's a good segue into something else I want to talk about, which is the sort of like fusion of person and brand and a means of making a living. Because I think a lot of people, and I think people especially older than me, boomers in particular, they look at younger people and the way they use social media and they think it's like oversharing or something like that. But I think that there's this thing that they haven't really been exposed to where there's this idea of like personal branding almost, regardless of whether you're selling ads or not. Because a lot of people do it even if they can't sell ads. They don't have enough followers, whatever the fuck. But I think that there's this like younger person's mentality of like, I'm not just a person. What I am is I'm me, but I'm also like a version of me, a curated version of me. That I'm putting out there, that I'm, it's not that you're necessarily, again, selling yourself as it, but it's like all folded into one thing, you know? And you do it in a way that I think you would say is like, it is the art, the whole feed, the whole grid or whatever it is art. But I think there's like a disconnect with an older generation. And I'm wondering, because you've been on Instagram, how long have you been on Instagram?
7 years.
Okay. Have you seen, because you've been on it so much, is there like a, when did that start to become so much more popular than, because I feel like that really started with Instagram. Before that, with like Twitter and Facebook, that wasn't as yeah. much what it is.
Yeah. No one ever had a personal brand on right. Facebook.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So how did you start using it as that, or did you discover that, or like when did that start to become something you folded in?
I would say it's funny that you bring this up because I think about this a lot. The fact that like now everyone is telling the story of their life on yeah. Instagram and sort of the narrative of their yeah. identity and who they are. And when Instagram was first started, I don't know when you got the app, but in the early days of Instagram, it was really like a curated gallery where you allow other people to see the world through your lens.
Yeah, right.
You know, like an autumn leaf on the sidewalk or, you know, a cappuccino with a cappuccino art with like a white border around the photo.
For
like
sure.
That was the digital climate of Instagram in the beginning. And I think I was one of the first people to really understand the potential of Instagram for so many things that we take for granted today. Its potential for ads, the potential for buying followers and leveraging that into more real followers. The way I built my brand was I bought 20,000 followers and then I bought ads before ads were even a thing on Instagram. The messaging tool inside the app didn't even exist yet. So I would have to like comment on these accounts' photos being like, do you have an email address I could contact you at? And I bought them so cheaply. I would buy them in packs of 10 for $5 an ad.
Wow.
with accounts that had hundreds of thousands of followers, and I was able to build that 20,000 up to 500,000 in maybe 2 years.
Wow.
While still getting a degree at Cambridge. So like that wasn't even my, I wasn't even working on that full time.
Right,
I was
yeah.
a full time student.
Right, right, right.
And also like trying to, you know, fall in love and have fun and becoming increasingly addicted to Adderall all the while.
Sure.
Yeah. But yeah, so I also, in addition to seeing the potential for ads and leveraging fake followers into real followers, I also saw the potential for making Instagram like the story of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I don't remember the question at all. I don't
yeah,
know
me
what
neither.
We're,
I'm
I don't
just
know
listening.
What we're talking
yeah.
about.
Yeah.
At
I
all.
Mean, what that what I want also to talk to you about is the Natalie who used to work with, mm-hmm. the article that she wrote. That was around the time where I started to become aware of you, and the general sense that I had was that people were angry at you, and I didn't know what that even really meant. And I was like, what the fuck is everybody so mad about? And then I read it and I was like, what the fuck is everybody so mad about? Even though it seemed to be clearly she's like coming from a place of negativity, I still didn't understand what the problem really was. I mean, you had basically like hired her and she just seemed angry about herself. I don't want to put words in your mouth or anyone's mouth, but my take on it was like, she's just upset about a thing that she kind of did, you know? And then, yeah. So I don't know what you have to say about that, but it seemed to like ignite a certain narrative around you that I was starting to hear about that I don't agree with. And I'm curious as to, did you know that was coming? And when it came, was it like, who the fuck cares? Because you're amazing at like brushing shit off. It's something that I've definitely noticed from your feed. It's like, you'll like post something from someone who's like calling you something and you'll like laugh about it or whatever. And the attitude that you have about it is incredible. And I'm curious as to how that, if at all, has like shifted things for you in any way, or like, what was that experience for you having her do that?
So many questions.
There's a lot.
This,
yeah.
Yeah. This is a lot to unpack here.
Yeah. Do your thing.
So much stuff. I think a common thread that I'm seeing in your questions is this really, and people do this all the time. They just sort of, it's very zoomed in, concerns about how I handle the pressure of people watching, how I handle the pressure of people thinking I'm something I'm not, the pressure of Natalie making a story out of like nothing. It really, none of that even matters, because the big picture is that Natalie did the right thing by making the most exciting story possible, and I've done the right thing sort of surfing the different waves of news that have hit me over the past 9 months. I mean, we're literally here because of how she and I have been able to manipulate our own stories.
Mm.
And Natalie's piece is so smart in the way that it really leapfrogs from outraging detail to outraging detail, just things that we love to hate in our culture, like me asking her to take photos for my Instagram. We don't see those actions as a young woman building a business. We see them as evidence of vapidity or frivolousness or just, you know.
But it so obviously is. It seems at least to me.
It's not obvious to everyone.
Why do you think that is, though? Is it, like, I feel like that's a disconnect for me, actually. Like, I see someone doing what you're doing, and I think it's like a brand thing. And that's especially, the more followers you get, the more time you put into what you're doing, the more you're going to care about it. And because it involves taking pictures, you're going to fucking take pictures. It's like part of it.
Well, you know I love that you see it that way, but I don't think most people do.
No, I agree. Yeah.
Most people, I remember just being so ashamed at Cambridge when I was surrounded by all these geniuses who had probably, you know, like go on to win Nobel Prizes in a variety of subjects, just being so deeply ashamed that, like, they would be typing away at some brilliant thing in the library, and I would be working just as hard on an Instagram caption that I'd spent the last 2 months perfecting to post it, and just feeling the deepest burden of shame of being like, I've spent 2 months on this Instagram caption and no one thinks that's a worthwhile investment of my time. And it was really hard to sort of like protect the flame of my own ambition, creativity, and just sort of like artistic interest, because I found it really rewarding to make digital art. And yeah, I do so appreciate that you see it that way, but I don't think we should lose sight of how rare your attitude towards this is, because everyone, it just influencer versus the word writer.
Yeah.
The connotations that we have for those two professions are so vastly different. Like when you're like, introduce yourself, I could have said influencer, but I didn't, because I didn't want people to fucking hate me.
It's true. There is this supremely negative connotation, which I find odd, because influencers, by definition of the word that they use to describe themselves, it's people give a shit about what they're doing. And that's why they're called influence. You know what I mean?
Honestly, the reason this is the way it is a pattern that has repeated itself over and over again throughout the history of art. Whenever a new technology is introduced as a mode for creative expression, it's always denounced as new technology, as science. Everything from, you know, synthetic paint colors to photography is a perfect example, because it also introduced this element of democratization of the artistic process.
Yeah.
You know, to render something in three-dimensional space in paint, you need to go to school. But to render the same object in three-dimensional space in film, all you need to do is buy a camera.
Yeah.
And the criticisms that were lobbed at the earliest photographers were that, you know, you have no training. Anyone can get a camera. This is technology. This is not true art. And now every major museum in the world has a photography collection. And coupled with that overarching pattern of human history to sort of see the forefront of our newest technological creative advancements as not being part of the true artistic canon.
Yeah.
On top of that, there is the pattern of really discounting again and again and again any artistic media that are the purview of young girls. And this extends to artistic media that are the purview of people of color as well, but specifically within the context of young white girls, there's, you know, scrapbooking in Victorian England. Young girls were making so much art, especially, I mean, more art than people who worked full-time as painters, because, like, these Victorian girls, like, were just sitting around waiting to be married. Embroidery is another example. These sort of things that are made by young girls are just not, no major music. Every major museum in the world does not have a scrapbook collection or an embroidery collection. And the fact that things like Tumblr and Instagram have really been the purview of young girls expressing themselves, coupled with the fact that we are always skeptical of new technology being, you know, art of merit, it really doesn't make it seem that mysterious to me why we don't take Instagram seriously.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think also it just sort of, there's like a bandwagon-y element to me when I hear people, it's almost like groan-worthy how much people, it's on the tip of people's tongues how much they want to say, how much they hate like the influencer thing, and like they don't want to be around influencers, they don't want to follow them, but it's like, I just don't, what I am disconnected from in that realm is like, I don't know why they care so much to be angry about it. Yeah. Because the worst case for me, it's like, that's fucking annoying, I'm not going to look at it. But it's like this, it's like this vitriolic thing where people will, and it might be, I mean, you tell me, it might be because it's like you can interact with the influencer and you can comment and write to them And there's this feeling that they're right there to be anonymously shitty to. And I mean, I deal with that to a degree, but I feel like, I mean, you post about it, which is one of my favorite things about your Instagram, is that you will post someone doing something shitty about you. And your attitude about it is amazing. But like, I can't imagine that that's the attitude most people have. And I feel like there's no, from the person doing the attacking, right? Like if they're going to be shitty to you or someone else online or to me, whoever, there's this unbelievable quality that I can't get over, is how ready people are to be shitty online and how not ready they are to be shitty in person. And it's like, it's like the influencer is almost there to be ridiculed because you're never going to see them in person, and you can comment on their page how much you fucking hate them. You know what I mean? How are you so good at dealing with that?
Well, I think honestly, I learned that skill very slowly and steadily over 6 years. And then I had to learn that skill very quickly and very thoroughly in January when I went viral as a scam. And something I've learned about fame is that as your name recognition increases, the barrier to entry of what you have to do to be written about lowers every time. And so, you know, Natalie's article never would have had the same momentum if I hadn't gone viral in January. And the next thing that happens to me will have momentum. Yeah. The barrier for entry of like what that thing has to be or how much of a mistake I have to make, as I definitely will, how big that mistake has to be for it to be news is lower and lower and lower. And like right now it's so crazy. I'm in the news like every 2 days.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Do you see that shit? Like, is that something that's in front of your face?
You know, I Google myself because it doesn't bother me as much, but I don't have Google news alerts on because I want to be able to have control of when I'm reminded about it. Like, I want to check in on it in places where it's like, you know, just killing it in business, feel pretty invincible, check the news. It's like, that's a perfect time to do it. Not in like a moment where I feel a little lonely or lost.
Yeah. I mean, that's incredible. I go so far the other way. I don't want to know what anybody is saying about me. It makes me think about me in a way that
I used to be like that.
Do you know what I mean?
I used to be so scared of what other people were saying about me. And you know, it really, I don't know if there's any other way to learn how to be it. I would never wish going viral as a scam on anyone.
Yeah.
It honestly like scrambled my nervous system for about 2 months. Like I was like an animal from the shelter in the sense that I like didn't want to be touched. Like I would text a friend and they wouldn't text me back for 2 hours. And then normally that stuff wouldn't, it wouldn't even register to me because I'd be living my life. But for the first 2 months after that, my brain lived in a place where everything was so personal and everything was a possible sign that the people who did know me from me, maybe they didn't like me either.
Right.
I was so scared of that. But going, I mean, there's not much in this digital era. They're not like worse things that can happen for a public shaming than being accused of something that you didn't do.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like making a murderer, that line where he's like, you know, you have control over whether or not you commit a murder.
Mm-hmm.
But in this country, you don't have control over whether or not someone accuses you
of committing
a murder.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I threw some events that were quirky AF, to put it in internet lingo.
That's quirky as fuck for those of you who don't know internet lingo.
Exactly. For all of you who are so lost on the internet that you're listening to this podcast, but you don't understand
it. Yeah. You know what a podcast is and you know how to click on them and listen to them, but you don't.
Who
know.
Are you?
Who are you? Well, tell us your story. Write to us. That's something, that's feedback I'll read actually. The events.
Oh yeah. The events. Yeah, it's so fucked up that I threw a niche event for a niche community and everyone who went fucking loved it, but because Twitter found it so laughable that, you know, it's not journalistic malpractice in this day and age to cite a Twitter thread as a source.
That shit creeps me out. I fucking
It's
hate
wild.
That.
And, you know, everyone's, it's all well and good that everyone's walking back those claims now. Mm. And I appreciate that for sure. But, like, no one can give me back those 2 months when I lived in a panic.
Yeah.
And that panic to overcome it, I mean, I started antidepressants. I got a really good New York City therapist. Just like the best that money can buy,
yeah,
the New York City therapy industry.
I would imagine
possibly the therapy capital of the world.
I think so, yeah. When you think therapy, you think New York.
New York, yeah. You think like neurotic New Yorkers.
Yeah, I just think of Woody Allen, actually, to be honest.
There's someone who deserves to be canceled.
Yeah, he needs to be in therapy for sure. Yeah. Even though his movies talk about it, he needs extra therapy. Yeah.
Yeah, so I really, I want to be careful not to present going viral as a scam as something that people should go through, or being publicly shamed or being canceled as something that's helpful or an event that necessarily changes you, because it will change you. It will make you really scared for like in sort of a permanent way where you wake up and you're just afraid. But if you sort of like any big life change, if you really, really throw yourself into just sitting with all the discomfort and whatever it kicks up for you, and really using it as a chance to learn about yourself and make peace with the parts of yourself that are heaping so much shame on you. For me, I really had to examine how much I cared.
Right.
What people thought of me.
Yeah.
And like, I used to even just like when I'd start reading a bad comment, like I would just like my heart would sink with the first few words, but like I'd read the rest of it. I'd just be worried if something bad was going to happen that someone was saying about me. And I had to, I'm not saying this is the same for you because everyone's mind is wired so differently, but for me, I really realized that the reason I was so scared of that was because I was really scared that I wasn't a good person.
Mm.
And I think I hadn't really internalized the belief that I was good. I think I'd really struggle because I am so ambitious and I want money and I want shit. And I wouldn't steal it.
I want shit.
But something that's tough is that like female ambition is really vilified.
Yeah.
And it's not okay as a young girl to want too much stuff or else people won't want you.
Mm.
And when I was building that online persona, you know, like when I sold my book to publishers the first time around, like Natalie and I made the choice to make that character. We didn't even use the word Instagram once in 100 pages of a book proposal. That girl did not have an online brand and did not have a mind for business and she wasn't even writing a book.
Yeah.
That girl had no career goals.
Right.
She just went to balls and had boyfriends.
Right.
And we made those choices because we knew that character is what would get us the big check.
Mm.
And we really had to sacrifice at a certain point whether or not we wanted to tell the truth or get paid. And we chose to tell the truth, but we lied by omission and we got paid. And it's just I just had really spent a long time sort of seeing my ambition and being really scared of it. And then being labeled something like a scammer, which really, of all the words, like...
It's a uniquely hungry
word.
Yeah.
And it was really hurtful for me because there is a real hunger that I have.
Right.
And, you know, when you Google my name, Taylor Swift is the first name that comes up. I'm very proud of that.
Oh, I'm fucking jealous.
You should be. She's amazing.
Yeah.
But the next two names are Anna Delvey and Elizabeth Holmes.
Holy shit.
Both women who have stolen millions of dollars, endangered people's lives, are either in literal prison or awaiting trial. And like, I've never stolen a single dollar from anyone.
Yeah.
I've never hurt anyone. I think I'm a really good person, but I'm really hungry and I really want shit. And it was so painful for the place where, like, I get my information from the news.
Yeah.
I never thought the news would be wrong, like maybe right. Fox News, but right. like not every news platform in the world at once.
Yeah.
And it was so destabilizing in terms of like my self-worth and identity to have the actual, a real headline is Caroline Calloway is not a scammer. She's just a self-obsessed mess. Like, and that was one of the better headlines because
they weren't
calling me a scammer. Yeah, yeah, like that was my best case scenario for a little while. And yeah, and to get through that, I really had to reach and really work for, work through all the pain and what it meant. But I really, it helped me realize that like, yeah, I am really hungry and I do want shit. And I think just admitting the truth of the things that had kept me from thinking I was good and making, not trying to bury them or deny them, but just making peace with them and being like, that part is sort of true, you know, but and it's true that people call me a scammer and just like sort of staring straight into the sun of reality.
Yeah.
Just being like, well, all those things are true and avoiding thoughts about them aren't going to make that any less true.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the scammer thing, it's interesting to hear it that way because it's definitely like an extreme, I mean, borderline, sometimes definitely criminal version of being ambitious and wanting things, a scammer. Like, that's just the going too far version of the good qualities that you're talking about, you know? And I think that it's sort of a confluence of reasons from my, to my eye about why that sort of snowballed. Again, I think someone like you is such an easy target and a desired target because it's the low-hanging fruit. Again, everybody wants to say you being a young woman and what other people would call an influencer, you don't call yourself one and neither do I, but I just feel like it was a confluence of events where it seemed like such a runaway train. And when I would look at comments, again, you brought up something that drives me fucking nuts, which is like our news sources citing users on Twitter as if just them shouting it into the void. But if that's your news source, you can literally find anyone saying anything about anything. You just need to find the fucking crazy person that's saying it. You know what I mean? So if I want to find someone talking shit about you, I can. If I want to find someone saying you're the greatest person ever, I can. And if I'm just going to go on Twitter to look at random people and what they think, I'm going to be able to find that, you know. But I just think that when I would look at the comments about you, especially during that time, all I would end up thinking, I wouldn't even end up thinking about you. I would just end up thinking, why the fuck is everyone so angry? Do you know what I mean?
Well, I'm glad you thought that, but that's not, there's just, you know, people just hate influencers. Like, it's such a failing of language that we don't have a word or a turn of phrase to describe the experience of, like, scrolling through our phones and just feeling sad and quietly alone in our lives, and all that jealousy and rage and sadness, it needs to go somewhere. And sort of like leaving terrible comments or just generally shitting on influencers, even with your friends, or just hating them, I think it's just sort of, or just clicking on a story like mine or any of the influencers who are like canceled for whatever reason. It's just sort of like a collective bloodletting for that feeling.
It's a good way to put it. Collective bloodletting. This should be the title of something. That'll be the title of this episode, actually. That's good.
No, I love that.
Okay, so now I want to talk about your fans.
Yes.
Who are they?
They're mainly girls in New York and London, with LA as third. It's funny because I think I don't really consider my followers fans. I consider them more readers. And, you know, when I was building my account and buying those ads, something that I did that was very smart was, since I didn't just want more followers, I wanted more readers. So I targeted fandoms of books, like especially serialized stories, I was telling a story about my life that was serialized in post.
So
like the Hunger Games, Divergent was really big. Harry Potter was perfect for me with all the Cambridge stuff.
And you're a wizard as well.
Yeah, and well, yeah. A witch.
Oh, well,
let's,
sure. Yeah.
Let's use the
witch.
Correct lingo.
Sorry. Yeah, didn't mean to do that.
But yeah, and so I really think of my sometimes I call them, you know, sometimes I do call myself an influencer. I'm really not picky about the language, and sometimes I call my readers followers, or sometimes even fans. Mm-hmm. I just don't really. I've just sort of surrendered to the, you know,
yeah,
the lack of language for
yeah
better terms, and those are the words we have, so I use them. But I think of them not really as like fans at a pop concert, but the relationship that a writer has with the readers of their weekly column.
Right. Yeah. Know? Yeah. 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 That's so okay.
I feel like you didn't ask a question, and I just gave an answer, which was great.
All questions.
I know. I feel like I'm taking an art history exam at Cambridge where I just didn't understand the question. I'd be like, let me talk about something I would like to talk about.
You know what? Every time I ask you a question, I want you to just talk just, about whatever the fuck you want to talk about.
Okay, cool.
You know?
Amazing.
Yeah, that's good. So I also, we're in LA. That means you're also in LA, even though you don't live in LA.
No.
And why are you in LA?
Oh, are you like teeing me up for to talk about movie and film stuff?
Well, now we've established you can talk about whatever the fuck you want, but yeah, I want to ask you questions about that.
Yeah.
But I don't want to jump right in because people won't know what the fuck I'm talking about.
Yeah. Okay.
So go ahead. Yeah.
So I'm in LA because I am selling my life rights, but probably a piece of intellectual property that hasn't, to be totally fucking honest with you, I'm going to sell a piece of intellectual property, but to get meetings with the really high level producers and studios and actresses, people aren't interested in a piece of IP that does intellectual property. I've learned the LA lingo.
Yep.
A piece of IP.
IP.
That doesn't exist yet. Mm-hmm. And I'm smart enough to understand that. And I also could sell my life rights, and I'm not fully opposed to it. But my plan right now is to, this next coming week, I have 10 days in New York during which I'm going to take my book proposal that Natalie and I worked on, and I'm going to sort of strip it for parts. We wrote 50-50 of it, and I'm going to take the lines that I wrote, because a lot of it's true, and I'm going to fix the lines that she wrote. Not fix them because they're bad. They're amazing. I'll worsen them by changing them because it's just so fucking perfect as it is. But I don't want to use her words, and I'm a capable writer, and I'm going to add in all the bad stuff. And I'm honestly don't really fucking care where this thing gets published because it just – I don't even care how much they pay me because the whole point of writing this piece will be to tightly hold the reins of my own narrative for the screen adaptation that's coming, and that it's so crazy. The first thing we talked about, when we can't even tell you this story in full detail, the first thing I said after I got out of my lift, after I was like, where the fuck am I?
Yeah, where the fuck, yeah, yeah.
They're literally sewing sweatshirts next door to us.
Yes, yes, yes. Here, right here, when Caroline came.
If anyone tries to tell you this is a very
fancy
podcast
from your – well, the room is. The room looks fucking –
okay,
what you're seeing looks fucking great.
Yeah.
When we were – I got a call from your manager. I believe your manager's assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, Caroline's there outside. And I was like, fuck, I wanted to be here when you got here because I realized, especially – if you're not from LA and don't know LA really well,
I was like, where
you're liable to think the area that we're in, just like the general area that we are in, which is called Frogtown, which is a great area, but like it doesn't exactly look like it. And I thought you would be like, I'm going to get the fuck out of here because you're like
set up to
be murdered.
Yeah, I don't
know
if you've read
the
news, but I'm very elitist. So yeah, I was like, I can't be here.
Yeah, and you're valuable too. I mean, if I wanted to like kidnap you, it'd be a good place to get... stuff you into like a home somewhere or
yeah,
a car.
No. To be fair, this is like the Narnia of podcast studios. You just like push back the sweatshirts in the wardrobe and then suddenly you're in a wonderland of
now we're here.
Tech tripods and microphones and headphones and people at laptops who like
they're busy.
Three people at laptops here and I don't understand why there's many people.
We are this is how I'm just a really, really, really professional person in a professional space, and you're here, also a very professional person. We're just very, very professional here. I paid them all to be here, actually.
They're not doing shit. Hired extras.
Like, take your prop, pretend you're fucking writing something. I want Caroline to think I'm
like, go over to like read what they're writing. It's just like H just, typed over and over
just,
again.
Just scribbling drawings.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Just doodles.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But yeah, so right after that happened, when I got out of my car, thank God one of us remembers what we're talking about.
Yeah,
I was like, you will not believe who I just met. This is so crazy.
Yeah.
And I feel like before you judge me for being like very LA about it, I cannot emphasize enough to you how much this is deviating from true LA culture, which is like mentioning famous people and being unfazed by them. I am so fazed by this. I am just, my truth is that I'm very struck by this whole experience, and I'm very ambitious and excited to adjust to this new reality, but I'm still really enjoying being starstruck by it, you know?
So, I mean, I would be excited if somebody was going to ever depict me in something. I would be fucking so happy.
I know. Well, this is what I've always wanted, truly.
To have someone be you where you can just sit back and watch somebody else be you?
No.
Because that's what I want. That's why I'm asking you.
Oh, my God.
I just want to sit down and watch someone else be Matt, and I can just be somewhere else.
Oh my gosh, you sound depressed.
I'm
not gonna lie to you.
Fucking doctor, because I am.
Felt that way, and I was very depressed.
Yeah, no,
I
don't go up and down. I just stay depressed.
Yeah, my dream when I was really in my depression was that I wished that time itself would stop, and I could just be in my apartment for a couple months, maybe, and just like go back to my life after time itself stopped, and I could just have days and nights to myself.
Are you too young to remember that show where that girl would go like this and time would stop, and she talked to, I mean, this sounds,
27.
If you don't know it, what's the name of that fucking show? Where the girl would go like this and stop time. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah, he's going to find out.
He's touching the tips of his two fingers
together.
See,
this is what would happen. She would go like this.
Uh-huh.
And then everyone was
touching his two fingers together again for everyone listening to this in their
no,
ears.
No, they could see us.
Oh, there's going to be a video as well.
What is it? Out of this world. Yeah. They go like this, and then everyone stops, and then she can do whatever the fuck she wants.
I would love that.
That's what we want. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That would
somebody figure that out for
but
us.
But I don't feel that way anymore. I'm really excited to be living my life. So, I mean, I would, you know.
Yeah.
I hope you're in therapy.
Oh, I am. I've been in therapy.
Me too.
Not in New York City therapy.
Maybe you should look into it.
I used to live in New York. I'll move back to New York to start doing therapy just because I need it so bad. I need the New York therapists.
They're honestly so fucking good. I was in therapy for 2 years before I found my therapist. I mean, obviously I'm still alive, so it did help and it got me here, but it didn't help as much as Philip is helping me. Philip is like
Philip's the
creme
guy.
De la creme.
Okay, so you had shitty therapists, not shitty, but not for you.
Yeah, they just weren't for me. Yeah, I think I love how you self-corrected on that, because I think no one really talks about how hard it is to find a therapist that you like. And it's so hard when it doesn't work out and you just like...
It's awkward.
It's so awkward and like you feel like I kept going because I just like didn't know it could be better and it wasn't that bad.
Yeah, right,
just,
yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, I got lucky. The very first therapist I ever went to, she is still my therapist.
Wow.
Yeah, but everyone I know is like, what?
That's amazing.
Plus, a lot of people like change after a few years, and I'm like, I don't want to do that.
Also,
this person knows me so well, I don't want to fucking start over, you know?
I feel like I'm a really heavy mouth breather. Is that a problem for you? No.
Okay, I don't even think it's true, though.
I was suddenly very self-conscious.
No, I haven't heard one mouth breath from you.
Okay, amazing. Yeah. That was my goal. I've been holding my breath this whole time.
Wow, you are fucking impressive. You can make money off of that for sure.
Michael Phelps, eat your heart out.
Yeah, change career paths for sure. Yeah. Can we talk a little bit about the corduroy thing that you're wearing? Because I love corduroy.
I love corduroy too.
Wear corduroy pants. And I get made fun of for it fucking endlessly. And it's bullshit.
Talk about a personal brand, though.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's true. So tell me about that rad thing that you're wearing right now.
So I'm wearing a matching pant and jacket, corduroy suit.
And that's so cool.
It's all blue.
It's honestly so cool. I was going to tell you when I saw you, but I was like, we're about to be on microphones and I'm just going to compliment her.
Okay, cool.
On actual microphones so the world knows.
Love a good validation. Hi.
For sure, yeah.
I don't know if you've heard of my Instagram. I'm very attention seeking.
I've heard of your Instagram and I've heard that as well. I've heard about you. I've heard, if I hadn't seen anything of yours with my own eyes, I would just have no idea what to think about you because I've heard every possible different thing. And I'd be like, what the fuck is this?
I think the important thing is to keep your eye on the big picture, which is like, that's sort of the goal, you know?
Yeah, right. Like, yeah. Yeah. No, that's fucking true. Yeah.
Do you know how hard it is to conjure money and fame and power out of thin fucking air?
I do, because I've tried it and it's not fucking easy.
It's so hard. Yeah. And I'm fucking killing it.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, it's a bummer not to be understood. And it's a bummer. The better version of that sentence is, it's a bummer to be misunderstood. But
yeah,
that's why I'm a writer and not a podcaster.
You corrected yourself, though.
Well, I mean, I catch it in edits.
Yeah, exactly.
But the first draft wasn't great.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's a bummer to be misunderstood. And it's definitely a bummer to be trolled or cyberbullied or canceled. I mean, that whole culture is so toxic. But like, big picture, I want fame and power and money, and people talking about me is part of that.
Yeah.
And that was something that was also really hard for me to accept, because I think for a while I was living in sort of a fantasy where I associated fame and power and money with popularity.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, if I have those things I want,
yeah,
it will be because people like me. And actually, no. Like, no. Talking to these actresses, even just in this experience of selling these film rights, or screen rights, film is just movies.
It is, yeah.
I've been confusing a lot of people in meetings saying film when I just meant stuff on screen. But
you're learning, though. You're turning into an LA person.
Oh, yeah. I'm really fast looking. But, yeah, I've learned the word packaging, overalls, second
look.
That's
a big one. Yeah. Whoa.
Yeah.
You learn more, you're gonna be ahead of me in this episode. So it's good. The level you're at makes me feel
good. It's okay. You can call me to consult. But
I fucking will, yeah.
Yeah. I'll teach you words like
Hella. Yeah. Yeah. Caroline, what does this mean? I just had a meeting. Tell me what this means. Yeah.
Oh my god. It's like me and after the meetings. I'm like, what did that mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But actually it's so funny. I usually just say that literally during the meeting. But these actresses have just been through so much scrutiny, especially which their like male counterparts don't receive. Female fame is different than male fame in the same way that like female being a working woman is different than being a man in the same professional spaces. Doing the same job as a woman is a different experience. And having fame follows the same rules of sexist gravity. And the goal is not to control the narrative or change people's opinions about you or convince people or set the record straight or, you know, any of that. The goal is to learn how to withstand a blizzard of opinions again and again and again and again and again, because humans are fallible. You know, not the humans we wish we were, or the humans that you see in movies, or the humans we try to make celebrities out to be, but like real humans make mistakes, and we're flawed, and we'll make mistakes again. And, you know, the best version, this is so hard for me to accept, but the best version of me isn't one where I stop making mistakes. And for so long, I held that idea so close to my chest without even realizing I had picked it up and started carrying it around, that, you know, if I just self-improved enough, I would stop fucking up entirely.
Nah.
And no, the best version of yourself fucks up occasionally and just owns up to it when you do. But you keep moving and you keep making your shit and you keep staying true to who you are and not letting it turn you cold or weary or, I don't know, jaded.
Yeah.
And yeah, you just sort of let the noise swirl around you and you just recognize it for noise. And if you're really a good person, your friends will stay by you.
Yeah.
And because you're nice and fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel like part of the, I mean, it's kind of like what you said earlier, which is that you, it's not that you would say it's a good thing that people were in an outrage thinking you were a scammer and writing about it. It's not that that was good, but I mean, if you look at it a certain way, more people know who you are now. And especially now that the truth can come out on the other end, it's hard to even make an argument that it, that besides the emotional toll it might've taken, that it was even bad for you.
Well, I mean, the emotional toll was so, what's so tough is that like the pain was so intense that I'm not even sure if you had asked me while I was still experiencing that pain, if I would choose it for myself. It's so easy once you're no longer in pain to be like, I'd do it again.
Yeah, totally.
You know,
yeah.
But it's the difference between like after your workout when you're feeling
yeah
strong and accomplished and proud of yourself. And it's the difference when you're doing the rep and you're just in pain and you just kind of want to stop and yeah. you want to quit. And so it's just so easy now to look back on it and be like, it was for the best.
Yeah, for sure. Like, yeah. What?
So grateful I was when viral is a scam. It yeah, made yeah, yeah. me who yeah. I am. Just like I feel that way about like my morning workout. Like, oh yes,
for sure, yeah.
I would have done it again 1,000 times yeah. for it made me. But like when I was doing it, I was like, this is such a bitch. Like, fuck this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely true that.
Am I allowed to curse on your podcast?
I mean, yeah.
She
please.
Asked way too late.
Keep going. Yeah. No, I've been cursing. Do
30
more.
Minutes in.
Catch up. Make up for missed time now that you didn't curse the first few. Start saying fucking shit mm-hmm. and everything else. Every other word now. But what I was going to say is it is weird because in my early 20s, I was actually really sick for like 2 years. And those 2 years were definitely the worst 2 years of my life thus far. Who knows what's in the cards for me later on. It might get really bad. But at the... Once it was over, and increasingly as time moves on, I think of that as a period of my life that I wouldn't give for anything else. And I really think that. But it's weird that it's just true that if someone asked me while it was happening, if I snapped my fingers and you'd be better, is that something you would want? I mean, that's the only thing I wanted at the time of my life, you yeah. know? But it's just weird that after the experience, your brain so quickly puts it in this different kind of framework, you
yeah.
know? And it's almost like you don't even remember it or something, you know? The trauma, I mean, for me, it was actually being physically ill. And I have a hard time even remembering what happened at all. You know what I mean? You're just like, I think when you're deeply entrenched in something terrible, you have these blinders on and it's just a moment in front of you over and over and over and over again. Yeah. So you don't have room to sort of reflect, you know? When did that all that shit happen with Natalie?
With Natalie or yeah. going viral as a scam?
The going viral as a scam, sorry.
Going viral as a scam, they actually both happened, I think, on the 12th of the month. That going viral as a scam, well, I mean, it's going viral on Twitter.
Yeah.
Started on the 12th.
Okay.
Going viral in the news started the 15th of January. And then Natalie's article, I think, dropped on the 12th.
Okay.
September. I could be wrong with these dates. I really don't.
So it was a separate thing.
I think I'm correct about the January ones, but I just don't know about Natalie's. I think the date that's popping up in my head is September 12th.
I'll believe you.
Yeah. You don't have to. You can fact check me later. I would.
I'm not even going to look. I fucking just believe you.
Okay,
that's
cool.
That's the story from now on.
Yeah.
Yeah. But here's the thing.
What's the thing?
You're not a fucking scammer.
Yeah, I know.
Did you know that?
Yeah. Oh, what if I was like, what is your PIN number? Like, just write it down on a piece of paper. Give it to me right now.
I'm serious, though. It's fucking weird to think about it. It seemed like it was easy to know that you weren't the whole time.
Yeah, but
so
you know,
what the fuck?
I so think what the fuck is an appropriate feeling. And you know what's the most what the fuck that I feel about is like it's not even it's the thing that I think is most fucked up is that I don't even really, it does nothing for me to be angry about yeah. it.
Well, you're not at all, and it's so fucking clear and obvious.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, because it's just, I just have, like, you know, just like Bill Gates, I have 24 hours in a day, and, like, we just have so much time to be awake, and I definitely think there's enormous value in having the self-confidence in the validity of my own feelings to the point where I can be like, this is fucked up.
Yeah.
But beyond that one sentence, I just don't think it, like, really, it's just so fucked up that it just serves me not at all yeah. to, like, sit in that anger other yeah. than just sort of acknowledging it, seeing that it's there, taking stock of it, and then, you know, just throwing, using it as fuel to throw myself into a project that I care about yeah. creatively.
Yeah. I mean,
like an Instagram caption, yes. you know, real
yeah.
art.
Yes. Yeah. you said something earlier that caught my attention, and it was, I don't remember exactly what you said, but you clearly harbor no ill will towards Natalie.
Oh my God, I love Natalie. Are you kidding me?
I want to hear about that, though. Like, I think the natural assumption, at least my natural assumption, is that you would feel like she either broached some kind of, like, trust that you have, or there's, like, a breach of something, or just details of your life that you, whatever the fuck. I would imagine that you'd be not angry, but, like, that you wouldn't think that was the right thing for her to do. You know what I mean?
Well, I guess I should say I do feel a little bit of anger. Mm. And when I'm being honest, I do feel betrayed as well. But I do not feel those feelings as much as I feel that what she did was absolutely 100% the smartest, most cunning,
yeah,
rightest thing
right.
she could yeah. do. Because, you know, the thing is, Natalie did in September what I did in 2015, which is she accurately guessed what version of herself would bring her the most professional gain. And she told the truth, but lied by lying by omission. Mm. I mean, like, everything in that article is true. And there's not a single lie in it. But, you know, I didn't lie in my book proposal.
Right,
I didn't
yeah.
lie on my Instagram. Like, I went to Cambridge. Like, I went to all those balls.
Yeah.
Like, I dated that polo player. Like, that really was my life. But I left out my addiction to prescription pills. Yeah. I left out my depression. I left out my generalized anxiety disorder. I left out anything that would lower the chances of publishers seeing me as a right. safe bet right. and cutting me a very fat check.
Right.
And with Natalie, I mean, times have changed. The news has changed. I'm now labeled as a scammer. And, you know, she started writing that article back in February, which is when the news storm around that story, which, to be fair, I myself would have clicked on.
Yeah.
An influencer who's a scammer.
For sure.
Even as I was, like, seeing that being written about myself, I was like, oh, God, I'm part of the problem. I would totally fucking read this.
It's everybody's dream click.
It's yeah. the dream click. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that phrase, dream click.
It's the dream click.
It's
yeah.
the dream click. But it truly is. And do you want to do some ASMR with that can opening?
I mean,
opening?
I just think.
But
I'm still bitter about not being sponsored, so it's a sore subject.
You know what? It could happen someday.
Yeah.
But yeah. But Natalie, the real Natalie Beach, and not the character in our essay, she is not. We don't have the same charm. I definitely think I have strengths that she doesn't have when it comes to making first impressions on people. But holy shit, do people love her. Like, Natalie, she was captain of the NYU soccer team because she was voted into that position
right.
because she's so freaking popular.
Yeah.
Like, and she wasn't the dowdy sidekick, you know, following orders. Like, she's literally the captain giving the game plan. And, you know, I wouldn't have been best friends with someone whose ambition and cunning and drive and hunger did not match my own. I like people who are different than me, but I do not have time for people who cannot keep up with me. Mm. And Natalie could keep up with me step for step and outpace me in so many ways. And, you know, as she really did with that article, I mean, it really took a lot of intellect and resilience and creativity to be able to sort of crumple that story into a ball and toss it up into the air and sort of like tennis serve it yeah. back into the world. Because it would have broken a lesser writer, influencer, sure. artist than me. But, you know, Natalie it was the right thing to do because that ambition and that hunger and that cunning is the very thing which drew me to her in the first place. And I really want her to get paid. She really wants to be a TV writer. And she will be. I mean, yeah.
She definitely will be now.
Yeah, her deal that she's, which I can't say who it's with or what network, but the deal that she's got is with an amazing producer who will make sure that once she does this project with him, she'll be in any writer's room she wants. And, you know, I also was a really shitty friend to her in the sense that, like, I've never met someone who struggled with addiction who didn't hurt people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I hurt her in ways that she didn't even give justice to in that essay. Like, it's really hard. It's hard to make a compelling narrative that accounts for all the millions of moments when I let her down in small ways. Just things I was late to, texts that went unanswered, just birthdays I forgot, because I was just so wrapped up in my own pain and my own mental illness and my own addiction. And, you know, the only issues that I take with her whole essay, which I think is just so brilliant, so justified, so factually correct, is that she did out the fact that I've struggled with suicide, which I can sort of understand because she's hasn't really been in the public eye, and I don't think she really understands the consequences of introducing a fact like that to the public record, or what that the safety in keeping something like that private, or the burden in making it public. So I can sort of understand that. And I can even understand my other bone that I have to pick with it, which is in over 6,500 words, she doesn't use the word addiction once. Mm. She's very careful to make my behavior as an addict on amphetamines seem like my sober personality.
Yeah.
Which is, it sucks for me, but it's so fucking smart. I can't even hate her. It's the right narrative choice because, you know, the more complex a villain she makes me, the more conflicted she makes her readers. And as the essay stands, it's very clear who is the flawed hero, you know, the plucky underdog to root for, and who is the batshit crazy spoiled rich girl.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, the parts that Natalie left out are the parts when, you know, as my best friend, I talked to her about how hard it was moving through these fancy worlds coming from such a hoarded, messy house in suburban Virginia, and how hard it was, you know, being a rich girl on Instagram. She was very much part of crafting that persona, and it was really smart of her to present the details of that persona without the fact that she was in on the jig. Because stories of being a rich girl are the very thing by which I use to pull myself up out of the middle class. And Natalie helped me. I really understood social media better than her. So she helped me understand that in the book proposal, which we wrote 50-50, that people hate the rich and they love the plucky underdog.
Yes.
And I'm really excited to actually like find a way to publish this book proposal because it's so clear that it uses the exact same narrative device that Natalie uses in her essay, which is my character in the book proposal is the Natalie of that world. Mm. Like I'm surrounded by like rich, beautiful swans who just like glide around me in their perfect lives. And I'm scrappy and trying to make it. And people love that dichotomy. And Natalie explained that to me. And I really agreed with her. I saw that she was right, and we made the book proposal that way. And I explained to her that social media, and especially Instagram, is people actually love the rich. On Instagram, if you want your content to succeed, it needs to be aspirational. And I didn't make those rules, but I'm smart enough to play by them so I can win. And I explained that to Natalie, and that was very much a part of our friendship. But, you know, when I sold that version of myself to publishers 4 years ago, I was in the position that Natalie was, you know, in February when she started writing her essay about me. She needed to succeed, and I needed to succeed. I needed that money from publishers in my own brain. I mean, I just wanted it so badly, and it would just be so hypocritical of me to begrudge her making the exact same choices that I myself have made when I was in her position. You know, I presented a version of myself that was not untrue in the sense that I lied about anything, but was untrue in the fact that I hid all the parts of me that could make it less successful. Mm-hmm. Like, Natalie's essay wouldn't have worked as well if she didn't play into all these really real factors that she didn't choose either. How we hate influencers, how I've gone viral as a scam, how, you know, people hate the rich in long-form narrative, how they love the plucky underdog. She didn't choose those rules. She just played by them in a way where she would win. And I have to make those choices all the time. And I not only, like, don't begrudge Natalie that those sort of choices are the very reason that I loved her once and still love her now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fucking interesting. I mean, what I'm hearing really is sort of this like very almost not extreme, but very devoted version of this idea of creative nonfiction, really. I mean, you're sort of taking that as far as you can and turning you yourself, your voice. I mean, in her case, writing for The Cut, in your case, your Instagram feed. And I mean, the way you talk about it is like you say you're being honest. You're just not putting in every detail.
Well, you know? I'm really different about how I approach it now because, you know, I've learned over. I made those choices to present that version of myself because I was dealing with a lot of shame about all the dark stuff that I was hiding. And, you know, I'm sure that Natalie feels she's a really good person with a good heart who, like, we both want to make honest stuff, and I'm sure she feels a lot of shame for hiding, like, her family, her house. I've been to her house in New Haven, and, like, it's nicer than mine. Like, her family is richer than mine, which I want to be so fucking cognizant of not falling into the trap of making this two white girls pointing fingers at each other being like, no, you're more privileged, but, like, at the same time, I think the fact that, like, Natalie's first writing job before this essay in The Cut was being the book critic at O Magazine. Mm. And she got that job because her aunt is the editor-in-chief. And I think it just – details like that are so important when the very premise of her story is that I had everything handed to me.
Yeah.
When, in fact, I was creating writing jobs for myself out of thin fucking air because no one in my family was giving them to me.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wanted to be a writer. And it's deeply important that if people, that at least when we talk about the truth of that story, that all of the truth is part of the record.
Right, yeah.
Because it's easy to manipulate the truth by leaving stuff out. But
yeah, I mean, that alone is kind of an interesting question because it makes this idea of, I mean, it kind of goes both ways. It's like embellishing the truth, like the James Frey thing, it comes to mind, like the whole thing,
a million little pieces,
you know, it's like people got so, and there's no analog to what anything that's going on with you, but like people got so mad about that.
I see the comparison.
But I didn't get mad about that because I was like, it's a fucking book. I want the book to be good.
Yeah, exactly. The book was so good. I loved A Million Little Pieces. And you know what? I fucking loved Natalie's essay. Like,
right.
She's not a journalist.
Right.
I think I think these facts are important part of the record when we talk about her story and the place it occupies in the news. Mm-hmm. And when journalists write about who I am and who she is, these facts matter. Mm-hmm. In her essay, I don't think they really belong there. I think she made a brilliant piece of art. And I think the truth is important when we analyze her art. And, you know, I mean, that's the whole premise of art history is, you know, looking at the truth of the context in which great art is made. But her essay, great art. Yeah. It's just really good.
Yeah.
It's so fucking readable. It's so exciting. It's so, it's so dramatic. It's so brilliant. And, you know, now with my Instagram, I really don't try. I tried making a persona and that was based on sort of things hiding what I felt shame about and also based on emphasizing the parts of me that I thought I could cash in on, that I rightly guessed I could cash in on. But I realized that, like, the reason I wanted to write a book and that I'd, like, you know, using my Cambridge degree to be an Instagram influencer instead of going to be an art historian or getting any normal fancy person 9-to-5 that you can get with that diploma and with those friends that you meet in those places is because I care above all else about creating stories about myself. When I was little growing up, I loved series of books, but there are no series of books that are true. They're all fantasy. And I loved them so much. But I just really feel like my calling in life is to make a series of true books. And also I feel really called to digital content, which is a sentence that I am very aware lots of people would laugh at. But I really stand by it because it's really how I feel. Mm. And now I don't try to make a persona. In fact, my approach to Instagram is totally different in 2019 than it was 4 years ago. So I stopped doing sort of that approach of trying to be someone I'm not in 2016. And then I took 2 years off to sort of really just like grow up without the spotlight that I'd placed on myself and without the pressures of social media. And I really needed that time to just recover from Adderall. Like it really just took 2 years to like stop taking amphetamines every day and like and deal with the underlying depression that made me start taking so many amphetamines in the first place. And then starting back in like January over this past year, once I came back to social media, at first I was really sort of scared to be back on it. And I sort of like dipped my toe in the water by only working in stories, which is how I ended up going viral because I'd built this whole event over a month on stories and the event had changed from when I first announced it. And the journalist who screenshotted my, I call her a journalist, but she doesn't write for any major news. She's a Twitter verified person.
Doesn't count. Yeah.
But she screenshotted my Instagram story and compared what I first promised with what the event was. And it was so unfortunate that I was working only in Instagram stories because all the slides where, you know, I explained how the event was changing, self-deleted and disappeared into the ether, and there was
no
record of
them. So it was just the first
them.
One, the explanation of what it was going to be and then what it had changed to, but
nothing along the lines. And, you know, it's frustrating because, like, it's not like she Photoshopped those screenshots. Yeah. They're on my Instagram. Right, like, I made all of that, and I did say it would be that. I totally did. And on top of that, I was planning an event with just me. And, like, I was disorganized. And I did order way too many mason jars. But, like, that's not a criminal offense. Like,
no,
ordering the wrong number of stuff for your event. It's hard planning events, especially for your first time. But she made it a criminal thing by comparing those screenshots. But now for this, after that, I sort of had to find the strength within me to withstand that, and I returned to regular posts in April. And since then, my real goal has been just being and just bringing my Instagram up to speed with the ever-changing nature of who I am. But my one rule about things I don't post about, I try to make content that delights people. unless something really terrible happens, in which case, if there's some level of pain that I feel like I need to express, I'll make an exception for that. I don't talk about anything that my manager doesn't let me talk about. So like business, Hollywood stuff.
Sure, yeah.
And I don't talk about anything that I haven't, that I don't feel healed from, because it's really hard to expose something that you're still sort of working through up to public scrutiny when you haven't finished working through it.
Right, yeah.
I'm just going to cough.
Do it. I've been coughing, yeah.
I hope this makes the video really exciting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Coughing rules.
And just adding some like...
I'll do it too.
Okay, amazing.
Okay. How long have we been going, Chris?
Wow, I thought it was like 40 minutes.
Yeah, time flies when you're having fun. I also want to talk a little bit about... I think when I look at your...
How long are your podcasts?
They go from 60 to 90 minutes usually.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
Is that long or is that short?
That's really long.
It's long. We do long. We go really in depth with the really important guests and the really important
Love
host.
That for you.
Yeah. How was your salad?
Really good. I was good. Pretty hungry.
Good, good. Fuck, what was I going to say? Yeah. Okay. This is something I'm curious about, and I've never been able to ask anybody who is remotely like you. So, like, how... I guess it's a two-part question. How much... because when you ask someone how much they work, how much time they spend at their job, they can tell you. Usually, you know, even as a writer, I have really weird irregular hours, but I can be like, I work from 7 at night to 11 at night, and then in the morning again, whatever the fuck. But I feel like there's this like, it's more fluid the way that your job is, being on the way the you on Instagram, it's like it can be all the time if you're not careful. Or is that how you prefer? Like, how do you manage that? Or do you not even really worry about that because it's so folded into the way that you live your life usually? Like, is it like, I'm working now, I'm on Instagram, I need to do a post or whatever the fuck? Like, how much of it is delineated ahead of time or specifically? Or is it all just kind of one thing rotating and you have a good balance for that kind of thing?
Well, the thing is, since I don't do any ads and since I love making art, the way I make money is that I sell visual art. I sell collages. I just did this series of paintings with this amazing LA chick you should follow. Everyone listening should follow @PsySwoon. Okay. Like PsySwoon. She makes memes, brilliant memes, and she's just like...
I'm going to do it too.
Oh my God. You literally should. Her memes are so funny. And
Psy, like...
Yeah, got it. And then Swoon, like, and she's like, she's just so cool. She's just like a really cool LA girl. Yeah, she's so cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
Follow.
Yeah, so she's amazing.
Okay.
And we just did some paintings together. So part of my day, I'm working. In fact, like, one of the most important part of my day, since it, like, you know, pays the bills, is making visual art, you know, gluing stuff, cutting up paper, painting, washing my brushes, buying new paint, going to the craft store. Oh my God, trips to the craft store.
Grueling.
Huge. Actually, I really love them. I can't even say they're grueling. Okay. I look forward to them a lot. It's nice to...
I like going to craft stores.
Oh, I love a craft store. I love a craft store so much. And so I do that for a couple hours every day, and then I sell the art in my Instagram stories. And then I work with my personal assistant to package each one up. I really just love, like, care packages and, like, little crafts and details. So I make a little card for everyone who buys one. So in addition to the art itself, I have to make the cards and sign them. She helps me package them up. And then I also do I've been doing so much press this month.
Yeah.
So I'll usually have, like, an interview every few days or do, like, a podcast. And then I'm trying to get in I've actually, like, fallen behind on this since my dad's suicide, but I was doing 500 words a day on my book. And then I work out and I go to therapy 3 times a week.
Damn, that's good.
Yeah, I try to work out every single day because it just makes me feel so much less like I wish time would stop so that I could just, yeah, like, you know.
And therapy too, stuff. 3 times a week, that helps with that as
well. Yeah. It was really good. It's so expensive. I have to make a lot of art for that.
Yeah, it burns a fucking hole.
Oh my God.
For sure, yeah.
I'm trying to think of it like a university education though. Like I'm getting a PhD in being me and will take like 6 years of just crazy tuition.
Yeah. You know, when somebody asks me that, because everybody who ever has ever met me just assumes I've been in therapy for a long time, they're right. But they ask me if they should go into therapy, and my answer is always the same, which is fucking yes, because everyone should be in therapy.
It's so
It's not like you go for a thing.
Yeah,
you go because you're fucked up, because everybody's fucked up.
Totally.
You are not exempt. Go.
Being a human, so painful. So
go.
Painful.
Yeah, just fucking go. Yeah, anyway. Sorry.
But so I have to do all of those things, and then I'll usually like see a friend or make a new friend in the nighttime. I love having people over for dinner, eating salads on my floor. But so all of that happens, and then into that grid work of, you know, Pilates and therapy and making art and packaging the art and making the cards and doing the interviews and the podcasts and the making of new friends or the keeping up with old friends, and also just like responding to my manager's texts and my mom's texts and I don't know, making new projects come to life. Then I also need to put up, like, I try to put up between 3 and 18 posts a day.
Damn. And that's on the stories.
No. That's grid posts.
Whoa.
And then in addition to that, I have a running Instagram story that I need to update and just sort of like keep going at all times. So I really will just fit that into any pocket of time that I have in the day. And sometimes if inspiration strikes, it means just being like, for example, when I got to UTA for my meetings, we only had like 12 minutes till the first one started. And I literally had to be like, I'm almost done writing this. No one talked to me.
Wow.
I know I just got here. Pretend I'm not here. Keep doing what you're doing.
They probably like that though. It's like, this is why we're in business with her, because she's this fucking dedicated to this shit.
Yeah. I'm trying to work really hard, because the thing is I'm also coming off of having just taken 2 years really off from everything, you know, like I sublet my apartment and I lived really cheaply with that money and I was internationally depressed, which is different than traveling. As you probably know, traveling, you're like on vacation, but when you're internationally depressed, you're sort of looking for a place that might solve your problems.
I have a question.
And failing.
Is being internationally depressed better than being domestically depressed?
Oh, it's there are pros and cons.
Okay.
You know, you have your routine at home.
Right.
You feel a little bit more rooted.
That helps with depression.
And that helps you get out of depression. But then in a new place, you sort of have the hope that like this new place might fix it. And you feel a little, I think long term being domestically depressed is the way to go.
Yeah.
But a short term fix,
it can jolt you out of it.
It can at least make you appreciate, you know, the slant of sunlight through trees in a European park in a way that you would miss at home.
Yes.
And it's nice to connect to like mindfulness and like being present when you're so far away from those skills.
Yeah.
And traveling while depressed sort of gives you access to those moments of being fully present that you wouldn't otherwise have access to.
Yeah. I mean, I find because I'm such a creature of habit as it is, and when I'm extremely depressed, I'll just like so much so that I'll fall into such like a, I was gonna say groove, but it's more like a gutter, and like I'm like on a track where even at home I'm like walking along the same path, I'm like laying the same exact way. It's like you get so fucking entrenched in the things that you're doing because it's familiar, you know. It's not that it's safe, because that's where you think it's safe, but it's really only familiar, and that can be the worst possible thing. It's a terrible note to end this on, but we're both depressed people, that's what we're gonna do. But you're not depressed now.
I actually just got into an interesting conversation with one of my friends who's a psychiatric PhD student at she works in someone's lab at Columbia pursuing some sort of doctorate degree in psychology or psychiatry. I don't really know. I'm a letters person. But she pointed out something on my Instagram where I had been like, I have chronic depression. She's like, the way the DSM-5 categorizes that, it doesn't exist anymore. You would say you have treatment-resistant depression if it's something that like you just have to manage your whole life, or you would say that you were characterologically depressed. And I was like, oh God, that's inconvenient. Yeah. But note taken.
Can't we just say we're depressed? Yeah. Isn't that fine? I think that's okay. If I'm depressed and you tell me how to say I'm depressed, it's only going to make me more depressed.
Yeah.
Let's not do that.
Yeah.
Just depressed. It's fine.
Simple, yeah. So if you're depressed too, you're not alone. And, yeah, you know, you should go to therapy. And you should not be discouraged if the first therapist you go to, it's because here's the thing. You will be discouraged if the first therapist, yes, you go to doesn't get you, because it's so, yes, hard after you've been holding so much in.
Yeah.
And then you finally open up to someone and they're just not getting it. Yeah. Or they're not seeing you.
And you're like, I knew it.
I knew it. And you're like, I'm wrong. I'm bad. Like, this is all bad. That's just might be part of your, maybe you'll be lucky like this freak of nature over
Thank
here.
You. And, that's the and, one way I've been lucky, yeah, my entire life.
And
but
find,
I was, yeah,
find the right therapist on, yeah, the first go. But I've literally left, before I found my current therapist in New York City, I actually left one therapist's office legit sobbing because I had just gone viral as a scam. I was really panicked about being liked. And I felt like this therapist didn't like me as a person. And I felt like we just... It was so bad and it was so painful. It was so painful.
So she just made everything even fucking worse.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It was, I just mean to say that, like, no one talks about how wrong it can go in the beginning when you're finding the right one. And you're not alone in your depression, but you're not alone in the struggle to find a good therapist either.
Yeah.
Even though a lot more people are open now about talking about depression than they are about how weird and painful and uncomfortable it is to, like, find a good therapist. Why aren't we talking about that more? Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think people just don't, still for some reason, don't want to talk about how they go to therapy.
Yeah, it's pretty stigmatized,
which is annoying.
Yeah. Let's, yeah, I, yeah, try to always post a therapy selfie when I go. Oh, you know who you'd like so much on Instagram? Like, holy shit, this is, like, so your brand. Okay, Alec with pen. I'm gonna be shocked if you don't already follow this guy.
I don't.
Oh my God, Alec with a C, Alec with a pen. Oh my God, he's so your brand, or just like the vibe I get from you.
I mean, I'm already laughing, so that's...
Yeah, you're going to love his humor. You're just like, tell me I didn't nail your brand with this.
Oh, he does McSweeney's. Yeah, fuck yeah. And people I like, I already follow him.
Yeah, there you we go. Good. There we
it's
go.
It's been like vetted for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, all right.
So I feel like I sort of nailed that. This is a good note to end on.
You did.
Everyone follow my friends Alec and Gabby at Cy Swoon, at Alec with Pen, and absolutely fucking follow me. It's very essential in my hunt for fate. I'm joking. I actually make great fucking content, and I
want to say one thing about you.
Yeah,
actually.
What about it?
You, I reach out to you directly on DM. I usually have my producer reach out when I'm interested in having a guest on the show, but I was just like, I fucking follow her. I was going to write to you. And you were so fucking cool right away, right out of the gate. And it was nice, because that's not how everyone always is. So, thank you.
You're welcome. My username is at Caroline Calloway.
It is. And everyone follow her, although you probably already do, because you have like fucking million followers.
I'm sorry, have you read the news?
Is your fucking head buried in the sand or not? If it's not, you know who Caroline Calloway is. Okay, well, thank you so much
for
your time.
Thank you so much for having me and all the Perrier.
I wish I had
more.
I'm
going to go buy a really cool sweatshirt next door.
I wish I had more. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They got plenty. I'm sure they're on discount.
All right.
All right, cool. Thank you.
Bye.